We are following all the news on this Christmas Eve. The government shutdown continues and no action is expected until at least Thursday when senators return to Washington. And the stock market sank again at the open this morning after news that President Trump wants to fire the chairman of the Federal Reserve, which he's been advised he doesn't have the authority to do. An eventful end to a year that saw a lot of big news stories. And we're joined now for a look back at the top global stories of 2018 by Christiane Amanpour, chief international correspondent for CNN and anchor of Amanpour & Company on PBS. She is in London. Christiane, good to have you back on Here and Now, and Merry Christmas.
Well, I'm delighted to be back. Merry Christmas. And let us not beat around the bush. It's been one heck of a year.
It absolutely has. What do you think of all of the stories that we've seen globally in the last year stands out to you as the most important one, if there is one?
Well, you know, without putting a date or chronology on them, certainly for our tribe, if you like, for journalists, for members of the democratic, independent Western world, for me, the biggest and most game-changing story has been the murder and the dismemberment of Jamal Khashoggi, because not only did that show what disrespect and what impunity world leaders think that they can still use against journalists, it was also about focusing everybody's mind again on the vital importance that journalists, you know, play in the world, on the incredible role that they play. And I think Time magazine putting Jamal on the cover, putting the two Reuters journalists who've been arrested simply for telling the truth in Myanmar on the cover, and for also noting the deaths of journalists in their newsroom in Maryland, in the United States of America, making them all persons of the year as the guardians of the truth, that has been one of the most important stories for me, for sure, and for so many others around the world.
Do you think that what happened there is going to make a difference when it comes to the leadership in Saudi Arabia? Many have said that the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was responsible for ordering the killing. He denies that. President Trump has said it could be, maybe not. But do you think that it is going to change the future of Saudi Arabia, what just happened?
Well, I think that is one of the key questions. Certainly, the United States intelligence organizations believes that it was ordered from his office and that it could not have happened unless, given the society that Saudi Arabia is, unless it had had top level authorization. And certainly, U.S. senators believe that it was ordered by the Crown Prince. Now, already you can see the effect of that reverberating, certainly through the U.S. Senate, which is one of Saudi Arabia's major supporters, because it's the Senate and obviously the House that supports and passes all sorts of resolutions and legislation on arms, on all sorts of other trade and support that the United States gives Saudi Arabia. And so the Senate just recently has, for the first time ever, invoked the War Powers Resolution Act to prevent the U.S. administration from continuing arms sales to Saudi Arabia. That's a major big deal. And it's also voted in the same resolution to hold the Crown Prince accountable in the matter of Jamal Khashoggi. These are very big issues. And it's not just words, because when it comes from the United States, this all-powerful ally, it makes a huge difference in Saudi Arabia. Now, this is not to say that President Trump is going along that route. He still supports Saudi Arabia. Of course, America still holds Saudi Arabia as an ally. The question really is, what do you do to make the Crown Prince understand that he can no longer carry on with those kinds of out of the rule of law kinds of activities? But I think what's really important is how it's focused the world's attention on the war in Yemen, how it took the death, the brutal death and dismemberment of a journalist who was working, after all, for a U.S. publication, the Washington Post, to focus world leaders and the United Nations and even Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates and the people in Yemen on getting an end to that war. Remember, there's been, you know, hundreds of thousands of deaths. Hundreds of children die every single day because of cholera and famine. 12 to 14 million Yemenis were standing on the brink of famine. And today we have a ceasefire. And it's not an accident that the pace of peace talks was accelerated by the knock-on effect against Saudi Arabia.
The one country that you didn't mention there that is part of this, too, is, of course, Iran. And this was the year that President Trump pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal, pulled the U.S. out of it. How do you think things have changed for Iran in 2018?
Well, look, I think you're absolutely right. Of course, Iran was not at all involved in Khashoggi's murder, but you're right. It is said that Iran supports the Houthis, which is one of the actors in Yemen. So Iran has praised the ceasefire. So has Saudi Arabia and the UAE and the United States. So for the first time in recent living memory, all of these disparate nations with differing agendas for that region are on the same page, at least in public. So that's that. Now, I believe, based on my reporting and having spoken to not just Iranian leaders, but leaders in the Middle East region and leaders all over the world, including Russia, Europe, everywhere, that pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal has made the world a potentially more dangerous place. Why? Because it has removed the only arms control treaty that the US and the UN and the rest of the world had achieved with Iran on what we all agree is the most dangerous weapons system in the world, and those are nuclear weapons. To prevent Iran ever having a nuclear weapon, this deal was enacted, and President Trump has removed the United States from it and thus risked the deal. It is still holding, but barely. How has Iran changed? It has had to completely refocus on its domestic affairs. People there are suffering in ways that they have not suffered for a long, long time. So the U.S. imposing sanctions on Iran as a way to force the capitulation of the Iranian regime and to force a regime change is not working, just like it didn't work when the Bush administration did it, except for that it's only hurting the poorest of the poor and now the middle class and all the kinds of people that Europe and the United States would like to see empowered in Iran. In other words, the people who believe in democracy, who believe in moderation, and who believe that Iran should be part of the community of nations. So in my view, it's been a very negative thing that President Trump did, and irresponsible, frankly. If your charge is to prevent nuclear war, then obviously you want to make sure that that country that you believed might make nuclear weapons and threaten the rest of the world is still constrained. You don't pull out of a deal that constrains that country.
I want to ask you about some of the biggest powers in the world, and starting with China. This is the year that China changed its constitution to remove term limits for its leaders, effectively making Xi Jinping president for life if he wants to be. This is also the year that we've seen a big escalation in a trade war between the United States and China. What do you think is going on with China and its power right now?
Well, here's the thing. You know, as all these other liberal democracies and Western democracies have been consumed with their own internal paralyzing problems, the United States now faces divided government after the midterms and the blue wave that did hit the House of Representatives and governorates around the country. That's an issue. The tribalism, the partisan politics, also in Europe, which is not only fighting for a sort of an existential relevance in the face of Brexit, but also illiberal democracies growing up in Europe on the eastern fringes, Hungary, Poland, etc., threatening the democratic tradition of Europe. All of that is causing, you know, major democratic power centers to kind of be, you know, dealing with their own mostly internal issues, while China is free to change the world and influence the world in its own image. So that is a major issue. China is building militarily. China is building economically. China is building in cyber. China is building in on-the-ground influence in places as disparate as Africa to Pakistan and elsewhere. China is creating a second superpower and potentially soon to be overtaking the current superpower, certainly in the economic and financial field. And these are real major issues. And as we speak, Xi Jinping not only cements his president for life status, but basically sends a very, very strict warning to the West: do not dictate to us. And while they never mention President Trump or this administration, they are very concerned about the trade war that is underway now between the United States and China. And they say they're going to carry on with their economic multi-year plan, and no one can tell them what to do and what not to do. So that might be bluster and it might be rhetoric, but the trade war is actually having a knock-on effect on ordinary people, not least of whom those in the United States, many of whom backed President Trump during the 2016 election. It affects farmers, it affects product, mm-hmm. it affects, you know, not just agricultural, but you know, all sorts of product. And these tariffs are, as every economist will tell you, a tax on people. So the full weight of the repercussion of the China tariff war and trade war, according to most economists who we speak to, will only just start to be felt in the next year or two.
That is Christiane Amanpour, chief international correspondent for CNN and anchor of Amanpour & Company on PBS. We'll continue our conversation with her elsewhere in the show, and you can find our full conversation as well as our roundup of some of the year's biggest domestic news stories at hereandnow.org.